money base in Washington. He says the election on November 2nd, just about 3 weeks from now, is so crucial to the future of our republic. Congressman Ron Paul joins us now. Dr. Paul, it's a pleasure. Welcome. You have said that we may very well be on the verge of a revolution. Do you mean this in a good way or a bad way? Are horrible things about to happen or terrific things about to happen in the relationship between the government to individuals?
Well, I think the revolution is inevitable. I think we're in the early stages. I think it can be very good, and I work on the assumption that we can keep it good. But I do not believe the revolution... will go without a lot of turmoil. Because I'm expecting more financial trouble, a dollar breakdown, and a lot of bills that won't get paid. The checks are going to bounce. But on the positive side, the Tea Party movement, what's going on in the universities with the young people, the interest in Austrian economics, the interest in curtailing the power of the Fed. This is all very encouraging. And because of our traditions, I believe we can come out of this doing quite well. We just have to admit the fallacies of the system that we have. We have to admit the Keynesianism and socialism and welfareism and inflationism doesn't work. And once we do that, our solution is going to be relatively easy.
Aren't we sort of caught in a box? I mean, even if the Republicans take over the House and the Republicans, including perhaps your son Rand, take over the Senate. For example, the financial regulatory bill, the so-called Dodd-Frank bill that everybody abbreviates by calling it FinReg, that's essentially managed and essentially paid for by the Fed, by the Federal Reserve. So a Republican Congress couldn't even defund that if it wanted to, right?
No, I think that's irrelevant at this point because we're not going to reverse. And replace what we have in a dramatic event. You are well aware of what's going on with nullification.
Right.
You know, they have a law out in California dealing with marijuana. Well, they've essentially nullified that, and it's going to continue. So there are going to be a lot of laws like this. And if the checks bounce, the states are going to assume responsibility for themselves just as individuals will, and things will work out. But we need eventually, though, to have people in Washington that will restore and believe in these values of limited government, balanced budgets, honest money, and all these things that made America great. But no, I don't think Congress is going to change right after this election, and we're going to have a few more Republicans, and all of a sudden these laws are going to be reversed. No, but the momentum then I think will go back in our direction. At least that's what I'm hoping for, and that's what I'm working for.
All right, you said that we may be on the verge of a Soviet-style collapse. Now, when the Soviet Union collapsed, basically the countries that it had subsumed before, during, and after World War II broke away and became separate and independent countries,
right.
Some of them with tremendously free markets that became the engine of great prosperity. Do you think that some of the states of the United States of America might very well say to Washington, it's your problem, stay out, we don't want to have anything to do with you, we'll survive on our own?
We're going to have a lot of that, and that should get better. That's what we really have to work on. But what I'm referring to is the giving up of our empire. The Soviets literally gave up their empire, and we will. For financial reasons, we won't be allowed to have a presence in the Middle East. We won't be capable of paying for the troops in Japan and Germany and doing all these things. And that, to me, will be good. We will draw back, take care of ourselves, take care of our borders, take care of producing wealth here, bring the jobs back, get taxes down low, and balance budgets, and that will be good. So yes, it will be reversed, but I do not foresee that the states will become independent, but more independent than they are now. They will not. They will have to give up the dependence on the federal government, and they will, because the federal government will be proven totally inept. They will have ruined our system. They will have ruined the welfare system. And fortunately, they will have ruined the corporate welfare system as well as the foreign welfare system. And we should plan on that and see this as a good thing and a good opportunity for us to, you know, do something simplistic like, why don't we obey the Constitution?
Keep defending that Constitution and sound money, Congressman Paul. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Jeff.
Okay, so that was Ron Paul on Napolitano's Fox show. And he's basically parroting what I've been saying for a long time, which is that after the November elections, you know, nothing's really going to change. The bills are still going to be there. The fiscal malfeasance is still going to be there. It's just going to be Republicans on one side, and it's going to be Democrats on the other. I have Gary Hunt in the background there. Gary, you still there with me?
Yes, I am.
All righty. Okay, hold on there for a second, buddy, and we'll get right into our show. The reason I wanted to play that is because as I've been talking for the past 6-7 months, that, you know, we are headed for a Soviet-style collapse. I think the Soviets were much better suited for a collapse than we were. And I think that one of the things that we're going to see is how unsuited the populace of the United States really is when we experience that collapse, which I think will be starting with the dollar. So I wanted to go over a couple things that were in the news. Obviously, everybody's been talking about John Irish's child being kidnapped by CPS in New Hampshire. I think that's a pretty classic example of how far the government has gone as far as their inability to determine right from wrong and how they observe and see themselves as what they are able and capable of doing when it gets down to it. I think that there's going to be a massive amount of backlash from this coming down in the not-too-distant future and so forth. Have you all noticed that gold, oil, corn, soy, wheat, oats, barley, and silver have all gone up between 13 and 14% in the past 18 days? And the dollar has dropped, I think, almost 6 basis points in the past 3 weeks. And come Thursday, what Barry Ferguson will be back here. We're going to be talking about that, because right now what you're watching is you're watching the implosion of the United States economy right in front of you, okay? And this is a historic moment because we've never been at this point before. As bad as the Depression was, we've never been to the point where people are about to lose faith in the currency. And they're losing faith in their government. The rest of the world is losing faith in the currency. That, obviously, that's why gold is escalating and so forth. And as it gets worse and worse, you're going to see, one, we're going to see hyperinflation coming our way. We're already seeing the inflation with the food prices and so forth. But the government has to start doing that. Well, you saw in the papers today that there's no cost of living adjustment for Social Security recipients until 2012. So they're getting less money, but the prices of everything are going up. So that's going to be really hard on a lot of people on fixed income. I guarantee you, if you have a 401k still, the government is going to grab that 401k and take it away from you if you don't cash that out and put it into gold or some other tangible asset, so forth. If it happens to you, and then you were happening to listen to this broadcast, you know, all you have to blame is yourself, okay? So Gary and I are going to talk a little bit about something he's been working on passionately, and it has a lot to do with the restoration of constitutional ideals and so forth. Would that be an accurate assessment, Gary?
Yes, it definitely is, and your lead-in story with Napolitano is the reason that we need to consider something along the lines of what I've come up with. We're in a position now where the, let's call them the enemy, has the advantage, that being the U.S. government. The enemy has the advantage of, they have the control of the time, they have the control of the place. There's little that we can do about it except grab our spare tires and be prepared for the blowout. Or is there? Because in war, the best defense is a good offense, quite often. And so I've been thinking about that. I mean, for years, people have been saying there, you know, there is no peaceful solution, but nobody proposes anything. And I'm inclined to agree with that, but I'm an avid student of history. I like older books. There's a lot of new research on what happened in the 1770s that's come out. And I started looking back there years ago, back in 93, and came up with 50. That's how we had a smooth transition from a government to a government with no laws, and actually had a revolution in this country unlike any other country in the world, where there was a smooth transition of both civil and criminal court and of local and colonial to provincial to state governments and to a number of isolated colonies into a nation with the Articles of Confederation and later the Constitution. Looking back at that, I had always thought, I think like everybody else, that the whole thing began April 19, 1775. Now, I've written an article based on more recent research. Most of it came from a single source, and it's called The End of the Revolution, Beginning of Independence, and it deals strictly with Western Massachusetts. But what happened over a year prior to Lexington and Concord is colonists were picking up the rifles, closing courts, telling judges to resign, and the judges were resigning. The only judges that didn't resign fled to Boston and stayed there. There were tens of thousands of people under arms, and at one point there was a report on September 2nd, 1774, there was a report of over 100,000 people under arms marching to Boston. Rumor had gotten out that Boston was on fire, set on fire by the British, and everybody was going down there, and the well-known people, Sam Adams, John Hancock, Dr. Church, and all these people were sending out messengers saying, no, Boston is not burning, and they turned around this massive number of people, and like I say, one estimate was over 100,000, but other numbers, easily 30 or 40,000, were marching to Boston in September, 6 to 7 months before Lexington and Concord. Gage twice was going to send troops out, refused to send troops out because he feared for his troops because of the massive numbers. He had about 6,000 troops in Boston, and when you got 20,000 armed people out in the countryside, you got a problem. So he would call his troops back and not send them out these couple of times if he was going to keep the courts open, knowing what was going to happen. He was getting pressure from London. You've got to do something. So finally he came up with the idea of trying to sneak out to Concord, seize the stored ammunition and cannon and things that were in Concord. And, well, we all know how that turned out. But what we are missing from our abbreviated history is the fact that we forced the issue by massive amounts of effort on the part of people to tell the British this ain't right. They broke the laws in many cases. But we forced Gage to do something. It wasn't them coming to Concord. It was us forcing them to come to Concord. In a way, in a sense, we took the initiative and forced the issue, and then it came to confrontation on April 19th, and we all pretty much know what happened from that point forward. So I've gone back looking at history and some of the events that occurred back there. Now, let me explain where this whole idea arose. It was last year. A friend of mine said, could a revolution be conducted in the modern world considering modern technology, extensive government troops, and battlefield weapons? And at first I thought the task seemed as ominous and daunting against such odds that it would be impractical, if not impossible. But then I started thinking about it, and I started thinking about history, and I realized that it's not as ominous and daunting a task as we thought, that if we follow the lead set by the founding fathers, we can find incidents that occurred that will give us a guideline. Now, we have to understand that we're on a different playing field than we were then. Back then, they didn't have technology like they do today. If something happened 20 miles away, it could take many hours, if not days, for that information to get somewhere else. And now, that information travels at the speed of light.
Let me interrupt a little bit. That makes the assumption that it's going to be a conventional-style war. And it doesn't.
Well, it is. This is foundational, though.
Right. My point is, Gary, it looks like we're probably going to be headed for an economic collapse. You know, I mean, there's certainly the chance of an EMP or a CME or an asteroid or an earthquake or something like that. But my money is on the dollar collapsing and food becoming scarce and impossible to get. That's where I'm betting on right now. So having said that, if the collapse of the United States happens in that vector, okay, then the federal government's biggest problem is going to be twofold. One, providing enough food and medicine and fuel to keep the population from rioting, which is going to be near impossible. And once they do break down and start rioting and anarchy hits the street, how do you control it, don't you think?
Well, yes, but that's down the road. We've got to get that foundation understood first, that these colonists actually killed people by tarring and feathering them, sometimes very painfully over a period of time. They kidnapped them, hauled them through the streets of Boston and New York and Charleston, South Carolina, revenue collectors, stripped naked, tarred and feathered, wearing signs, deprived of their access to their home, their liberties taken and everything. In many cases, Governor Hutchinson and three or four others had their houses bodily torn down by the colonists. We have the colonists stealing arms and ammunition, munitions from the British, and we have the very destructive equivalent of probably hundreds of thousands of dollars a day, the seizing by a bunch of Indians of tea in Boston Harbor, uh-huh, and dumping it in the harbor, destroying private property.
Let me also break in one more time. Did you read today that Sacramento is selling, I get numbers from 12 to 24 buildings for $2.4 billion? State-owned buildings.
I understand that they're selling, they're privatizing, and some of the purchases
right.
are probably going to be Chinese, yeah.
But they don't have the right to sell that. Those aren't their buildings to sell. They belong to the people. This is the criminal mind that we're dealing with, folks, okay? They think that because the state of California is broke, that they could take a building that was paid for, I guarantee you, by our taxes, in one way or the other, whether it was a bond or whether it just came out of the general municipal fund. It was paid for by us, the people of California, right? And now they're saying, well, we're going to sell this to a private enterprise because we're so fiscally irresponsible and morally corrupt that we need the money because we're that screwed up. And that's basically what the federal government is doing as well, because they're giving away all sorts of our natural resources to the Chinese to make up for their interest payments. So they're basically selling the country out from underneath us as we speak right now.
Well, the plan will eventually address that. The whole aspect of we're one of the few countries in the world that allows people from other countries to own property in our country.
Uh-huh.
And that's a mistake. It should never have happened, and that has to be dealt with, and it will be dealt with down the road. We have to start somewhere. Now, understanding the Constitution, we gave the authority through the Constitution to enact a government.
Mm-hmm.
We could only give the government the authority that we had individually or collectively to, which gave them the authority or the powers that they had.
Mm-hmm.
The question arises now is if they can kidnap, assassinate, and do all these other things that they're doing openly now, are they assuming that we had that right to give them? And if they did, then we must assume that they're saying that we have the right to assassinate and kidnap.
Okay.
I think it's the logical conclusion.
Okay.
Now, not that I believe the Constitution or our authority extends that far, But we're on this playing field now, and we have to assume that if this authority is given to them, then it's also given to us, that they have assumed that we have that same authority individually and had a right to give it.
Right.
Now, this comes into play because, well, you mentioned Irish, but, you know, one of the first steps, and what's going to happen, in the best I can picture, is like a big drug bust. They're going to take the people that are active in the Patriot community, the ones that people tend to listen to, the ones that are the leaders, discounting, of course, their operatives, especially in the large militias and everything, but they're going to sweep everybody at one time. When they do a drug bust, if it's 6 p.m. Pacific, it's 7 p.m. Mountain, 8 p.m. Central, and 9 p.m. Eastern time, they're going to swoop down and grab all the potential leaders in the Patriot community.
Mm-hmm.
That is probably the first really significant step, the equivalent to Lexington and Concord, but they're going to sweep up everybody. They're not going to catch Hancock and Adams before they can get out of Lexington. And they're going to catch everybody else that's been active, Virginia and all the states that have activity. They're going to do it at once. It's the uneven playing field. And the reason that we've got to take the initiative is to keep that from happening. So given that that's the presumed authority that we have based on the government, now this is theoretical. Understand this. This is the legal disclaimer. This is a theoretical scenario. It may never happen in this country, but what we're discussing is if what most of us expect will happen, doesn't matter exactly how we expect it's going to happen, but the fact that the government's going to fail and we're going to be subject to who knows what somewhere along the line, this is a way that we can take the initiative. And it has historical precedents, and I've laid out some of them already. More will come as we go through it. But initially, we've got to have, now, two important things in the transition that were very important. Committees of Safety sent the militia to Boston across state lines or colonial lines without invitation. So, you know, a question arose in the Arizona militia situation, can we send our militia down to Arizona to help them? My guess would be yes. The problem is there's no civil authority that they're obedient to, and the concept of military obedient to the civil authority is part of our heritage. It goes back as far as the Magna Carta. So,
well, yeah, that's a bit of a problem with the
militias. Ideally, we have committees. Pardon me?
That is a fundamental problem with the militia units. There's no civil authority for them to report to. And that's why...
There are some militia that are asking counties or governors to recognize them, and usually they're getting no reply. But can they subordinate to their community through a community of safety as they did 230 years ago?
Let me back up a little bit now. So certainly the existing Congress and Senate is not going to recognize the militia at all or give any authorization for any use of force required as needed and so forth. So how do you bestow that authorization on a civilian militia?
Well, two things. One, even federal statutes makes everybody from 18 to I forgot what the federal age is, 45 or something.
Yeah, I understand that. That's
now the whole concept of militia is the fact that we have a right as individuals to protect our property and our lives, and the militia is merely a collective of that.
All right, well let me give you an example. Okay, there's a national park, actually BLM land in Arizona, that has a sign on it saying that, you know, United States citizens should not come inside this park because it's too dangerous because there's illegal activities. Okay, so what authority would be required for, let's say, Hammerdown and his group, the Arizona militia, to take 200-300 people, go into that park, round up anybody suspected of doing any kind of illegal activities, place them in arrest with a citizen's arrest, call the Border Patrol and say, hey, I just picked up this guy. He's got this drug, this gun. This guy's bringing these illegals over here. What's to stop a civil authority from doing that? Or which civil authority would authorize that?
Well, properly, a civil authority should authorize it. What really surprised me, and I wrote an article about that, is that the government has done nothing But I think they're afraid to because of the sympathy is obviously in support of the militia because we got a serious problem with the invasion that's occurring on the border. Not illegal immigration, it's an invasion. When you've got tens of thousands of people crossing the border, it's an invasion. The fact that they're armed is inconsequential. But I'm surprised the government hasn't acted on that. I think they would like to find a case that they could charge as murder where they could get good publicity on it. Get that emotional sympathy. Oh, the guy had an AK-47 and 500 rounds of ammunition, but he was shot in the back, or something like that. Why they haven't acted now is beyond me, but the collective right of self-defense and the subordination to civil authority are part of our heritage and should be there. And I think that the militias can operate in our defense as they did at Boston. But I think that they also need to begin looking at the civil authority they're going to transfer to. Now, what happened back then is all the militias that existed in the country were subordinate to the governor of the state through their town meetings or their county or something, some form like that. But when the royal government failed to operate within its, I'll use Massachusetts, when they voided the Massachusetts Charter in favor of the Massachusetts Government Act, they had breached their contract, the charter, with the people of Massachusetts, so the people of Massachusetts withdrew their obedience to the royal government and transferred it to their local or colonial government so that they still had that tie to obedience to civil authority. And all commissions were not given by the militia. They were given by the Committee of Safety or the town meeting or the county or the provincial Congress.
Right.
So the commissions come, as they do in our military. Joe, you're familiar with that. You received a commission from the Congress of the United States, correct?
Correct.
That commission is the obedience, especially, of officers who can withdraw that commission. It creates that line of obedience, at least to the higher levels of command, the officer corps, to that civil authority. You're working for us, and you will obey us. So properly, the committees of safety should be commissioning officers or decommissioning them if they find
out. Gary, let's go back to Arizona, okay? So
okay.
Arizona is out of control, right? I mean, the federal government is, you know, they send National Guardsmen there, and I understand that half of them aren't even armed and are sitting on a border against armed insurgents and so forth. So the only thing that someone, and remember last year or the year before, they covertly basically took all of the National Guards away from the states and put them under the Army Reserve and so forth, so the states no longer have the National Guard capabilities. So Janet Brewer doesn't have a National Guard at her disposal. Otherwise, I would think that she seems to be someone of some fortitude that's not afraid of making a decision, that she would have called out the Arizona State Guard to go down to the border and say, you know what, get rid of these guys out of this park, so forth. So she doesn't have that anymore. She doesn't have that capability. So the only thing that she does have remotely resembling that would be the state militia, if the state militia was recognized by the governor of Arizona as a lawful legal unit, correct?
Right.
And that's where we're at. You know,
two things to understand about Brewer. She wasn't going to sign that law at first, but then there was political pressure, and she decided to sign it. She is one of the, what is it, a board of governors that the president created? She's one of the sitting members of the 15 governors that they've, decided as their governor's council or whatever it is. But she probably wasn't going to sign it. Now, she's got the fortitude to stand up against the lawsuit because she signed the bill. Whether she would call the militia or not, I doubt that many governors in any state would be willing to call forth the militia. For example, Texas has done nothing to call forth the militia. And they've got some serious problems down there as well. And then we got the press playing the other side saying, oh, this girl probably shot her husband, but now the proof is beginning to come out that isn't quite the case. But we've got the press still, taking the side of what the government wants, and I imagine that was a lead from the government that got that whole story that she shot her own husband started.
So how do the citizens enact the committees to authorize the militia to use force? How do you make that
happen? Well, properly, the committees of safety should come into existence, and then the militias should transfer their allegiance to them as a civil authority,
okay,
because they are.
How does the committee of safety get formed? Is it an elected body, an appointed body? I mean, what I'm asking is that, okay, I understand the concept, I understand what's going on, but let's take Arizona for an example. How do you form a group of civilians, and then you have to give them the authority, or they have to assume that they have the authority to issue an order to tell the militia that, you know, you need to go out there and eradicate all of the illegal activities in this this piece of BLM property?
Well, how are the committees of safety formed? As near as I can tell, and I've got the entire minutes from Albany from 1775 to 1781, and I've got many other books, and they don't really talk about the process, except it appears that what happened is people subscribed to the Committee of Safety. They went down and said, I want to join the Committee of Safety. Others did not.
Okay.
Strictly voluntarily.
At the bottom of the hour, I got to take a short break. Gary, hang in there. Guys, I'll be back in just a little bit, all right? Hey guys, it's Joe. Have you been looking for a great place to buy your gear? Well, go check out thepatriotstore.net, offering a full range of military camping and survival products to the budget-minded
patriots everywhere. Buying all your survival gear has never been easier using their unique four-pay plan. So go and visit www.thepatriotstore.net, the no-nonsense place to buy your gear. See you back on the air soon. Thanks.
Okay, I'm back. Before we get back with Gary on the committees of safety, I saw in the chat room that they closed down Cliff High's website, Half Past Human, the web bots and so forth. I don't know if you follow Cliff and his work and so forth, but he has that predictive linguistic software that it predicts things based upon the fact that everybody's psychic and so forth. But he was getting pretty accurate predictions on a lot of things. Like he predicted the Gulf's fiasco back in, I think, February. That something would happen that would affect the oceans and so forth. And then come April, boom, April 20th, right? Look at the mess we got in the Gulf. So it's kind of interesting that they took him down like that and so forth. Okay. Anyway, so committees of safety. So there is a verse in the Constitution that talks about those that have the knowledge have the right. They have, if you are a citizen of this country and you are aware of what's going on and you're not one of the sheeple, then you have the responsibility to do something about it. That's the part of being a citizen, okay? Citizen responsibility. And unfortunately, too many people shirk that responsibility, and that's why we're in the situation that we are now. So, Gary, let's talk about that.
Okay, now in 1692, if I remember correctly, the governor of New England was Governor Andros. And the militias were subordinate to Governor Andros. Now, Andros was raising the rents on people and doing everything contrary to what the colonists believed would be right. Now, this is almost 100 years before the revolution. The militia then created a committee of safety, transferred their allegiance to that committee of safety. That committee of safety directed them to arrest Andros. Andros was arrested by the militia and held in jail until the king agreed to transport him back to England. So the practice that they used, but what we've lost from our history, and we're just now relearning, and I'm doing what I can to educate as much as I can learn about committees of safety, is they're a fundamental part, one of our rights to act collectively. Now, let's look at the revolution. Let's just suppose committees of safety didn't exist, and does that mean the militias couldn't fight the British? No, because the inherent right of protection of property and of life, the whole reason for militia in the first place, if I have it individually, I can practice it collectively. We're just not meeting the ideal situation, but then we've been denied through the educational process the full comprehension of the necessity of committees of safety, but at the same time, we cannot say that abrogates our right to form as militia for collective self-defense and protection of our property. So I think that everything that they do in Arizona can be argued quite well to be an exigency that's necessary under the current circumstances, and we'll get back to getting things in order in the civil obedience when time allows, but right now we've got a problem that's got to be dealt with, and it's called the Red Crows are crossing the border at phenomenal numbers.
Yeah, and
so
let me break in on what I want the chat room and all of those listening, okay, all of you that are members of the militia unit and so forth, you need to get with your units, okay, and you need to understand what Gary is talking about, because, you know, if you're waiting for someone to take action and so forth like that, well, you could be waiting a long time, you know. And I'm not suggesting that we go out there and do an armed conflict, but the very first thing we should do is you should get together, and we should enact the committees of safety and get some kind of civilian citizen backing so that we can get an authority to take some kind of action. And starting with Arizona, I think personally, my opinion. If we went down there with 1,500 armed men that was fairly well trained, prior military and so forth, and went down there and just kicked some Mexican ass, right? I mean, you know, I'm not going to be political. Let's just go kick some ass. Let's show them how gringos kick ass, right? And then say, okay, well, that's how we do it when we get tired of you guys fucking around the way you're fucking around. So are you listening to us now? And that's what needs to happen, some kind of event like that. And I think that would get the Fetty's attention, probably not in the right way, but the thing is that it would get the Fed's attention and so forth. So anyway, anyway, what do you think, Gary?
Well, I think we could, you know, and there are two scenarios that I've thought about. One would be to, you know, find the trails they're coming in, stake out the trails, and when they cross the border and come up that trail, ideally you'd have a wired speaker down there so they didn't know where the voice was coming from. But when they get by the speaker, you fire a few rounds in front of them, a few rounds behind them, and say, okay, drop your weapons, put your hands up, okay, drop your backpacks and your vests and your ammo belts, okay, take your shirt off, take your pants off, get them down to underwear and shoes, and now they turn around and go back where you came from. And send them back across the border in their skivvies and see what their bosses do to them, and also what other people are willing to come across the border. The other one, probably a little more violent, but I think we still have a right to protect our country, is to go down and sign the border with notice this is a free fire zone, the first 100 yards inside the United States, and have people staked out. And anybody comes in that free fire zone, you shoot them. If they manage to get through it, you arrest them. And just leave the bodies lay. I mean, you know, somehow we've got to stop the invasion. And, you know, the government's approved free fire zones. They've used them extensively. You know, when I was in Vietnam, the free fire zones, it doesn't matter who it was. I was flying with a pilot once in a bird dog. And we were, you know, in a free fire zone, and there's a guy down there with a water buffalo attending his rock paddy, and the pilot comes around and shoots some Willy Peep rockets at this guy. Now, you know, bird dogs aren't made to fight combat. We use the rockets to mark targets more than anything, but he's trying to kill this guy with rockets, and he probably did, or white phosphorus. If not, he damaged him severely. So we've had tactics of free fire zones. So then if the government has the authority, they got it from us, then we must have the authority. But we would want to mark it first to give people notice it. And then when people come up to the border and they see the sign in Spanish and English, press 2 for Spanish, and it says free fire zone, enter at your own risk, you probably won't leave it. And they see bodies on the other side just laying there rotting, swelling up, flies all around. They might have second thoughts about coming over. But, yes, something serious has to happen. It has to be a coordinated effort, and it has to be one that we think we can defend. And the free fire zone might be a little harder to defend, but I think sending them back across the border in their skivvies and their shoes would be one that would be hard for people to be critical of. And we always have to think how the public is going to react to what we do. But yes, I think the authority is inherent in us. Being having the English heritage that we have, that inherently we have the right to defend ourselves.
Well, I could tell you another thing. I could tell you for a fact. And you know, let's go back to Waco. And by the way, I don't know if you all remember, Gary was my first guest, and we talked about Waco and the truth about Waco. But let's go back to Waco. If there were, how many feds were there? 150, 200?
There were well over 200. It was hard to get a count. Now initially, there were about less than 100, I think,
okay,
but it built up rapidly.
If there were 1,500 militiamen armed watching what the feds were doing, what do you think the feds would be doing? They'd be awfully damn polite, don't you think?
They would, except I think we discussed that in the show, that Waco was, to Riddle put it, because now we know the government will kill people under that circumstance. Before then, it was speculative. But yes, I think if there were militia, and I think the government was concerned about that, but the Davidians did not want the militia to come down. And so, you know, it's their show.
You're right. And that was stupidity on Koresh's part. You know, and I think Koresh was a fairly stupid man. So,
Well, in hindsight, it was. He fully expected to walk out.
Well, we know how that ended up. So, but the thing is that getting back to Arizona, okay, if there was 1,000 militia members in Arizona that was dedicated to, one, eradicating the illegals from the BLM property, which is being held hostage in American soil. Okay, there's not a whole lot the Fed, the Border Patrol, the FBI, the ATF. There's not a whole lot. But they can't do a mass arrest because that's just going to piss people off, right? All they can do is watch and let it happen. That's all they can do. Now, they may try to get the leader and so forth after all that, you know, come to play and so forth. But I dare say that, and if there's any media there, a decent media source, then I think it would kind of wake up the American people and go, well, maybe we can kind of take control of our destiny and not count on these lackeys from Washington who really are incompetent and incapable of doing what's supposed to happen and so forth. And so, you know, I think that's a polarizing event that needs to happen, you know, before the collapse for something like you're talking about to be successful.
Well, you're right, and it's a dilemma for the government because, you know, there's lawsuits against SB 1070, and I understand, and I've got to find some more information on it. There's a lawsuit against Arpaio, and I'm kind of wondering where the Constitution gave the government authority to challenge enforcing, protecting borders, but
well, clearly
the government has got a real dilemma. It's an enigma with the militia down there because they got two choices. They can send troops down there or not send troops down there to deal with the problem. Now, if they send the troops going to, and here's the enigma, are they going to go after the Mexicans that are crossing the border illegally, or are they going to go after the militia that are protecting the border lawfully?
You know, and that's the $64 question, because what you know what they're going to do is they're going to go after the militia. They're not going to go after the cartel, because the cartel shoots to kill, right? You know, but the thing is that, you know, an event like this has to happen. It's going to be a polarizing event. They can't afford another Waco. They can't afford another Ruby Ridge, okay? Because they know that the Americans won't stand for it. And then, you know, I mean, they're not stupid enough to even try. But something like this, and what's got to happen is that, you know, it's like the Mexican cartel is going to come over and kill a bunch of ranchers or something like that, or somebody defending his property from that. And that's going to piss enough people and say, you know what, this is as much as I'm going to stand. I'm not taking anymore. And that's what happens. Eventually, you get to a point where you just can't take it anymore, and you have to do something about it because it's just so unrighteous of what's happening. And now, I mean, clearly, let's take a look at this administration. I consider this administration as an enemy of the United States of America. I consider Obama and Biden and Lieberman and Pelosi and Reid, all of those individuals are enemy of this country. They should all be tarred and feathered or hung for treason and sedition. Okay, right along with Carter and Clinton and his wife and so forth. And that's where we're at right now. We're at that point.
Well, I think Bush are in there too, aren't they?
Well, Bush.
Or shouldn't they be?
I think Bush and Cheney should go to jail and have bread and water the rest of their lives and so forth. But Clinton definitely needs things. He should be hung for the things that he did while he was the president of the United States, okay? And Obama definitely should be hung for the things that he did. In fact, he's already, you know, his very first act was illegal when he was named the head of the UN Security Council. You can't do that and be an officer of the executive end of the government. Okay, it's unconstitutional. It's an illegal act. It's an act of sedition and treason and so forth. And people don't realize that, okay? And that's one of the first things that happened is they got bestowed that honor, supposedly, UN Security Council head. Okay, so just by the fact that he accepted that, he should have stepped down from his presidency, even though he doesn't rightfully have that and so forth. And that's a whole new other thing that we'll get into shows down the road. But we're at that point now. You got a good part of the American public really upset, okay? You got a small percentage of the American public that's highly upset, and then you have the radical right that's just ready to pop off at any time and so forth. But I think there's a polarizing event in the future, and personally I think it's going to have to do with the economic decay that we're facing and so forth. But I think Arizona is as good as catalyst as any for something like that to start.
It is, but I just doubt that the government will take the risk. You know, if you were National Guard or Reserve, it was one thing at Kent State where they fired on Americans. In fact, the question arising now, whether shots a 38 caliber pistol wasn't fired four times before the shooting started. It's different there. Now, when you're out in Arizona in that desert, you're going up and down those hills, and if you've been there, it's pretty nasty terrain. The guys are going to have a lot of time to think and talk, unlike having, you know, 2,000 students facing a handful of National Guard. Not much difference than the Boston Massacre, really, totally outnumbered. But when you've got troops that are going to go out there, are we going to hunt Mexicans or are we going to hunt American militia that are protecting our own border? I think you're going to they have a very serious problem psychologically getting any troops, except maybe special forces or some special team SEALs or something that are just committed killers, to go and take a stand against the militia. So I don't think they can make that work, and I don't think we'll see anything out of there. I could be wrong, because you never can tell how stupid the government can act. But the press coming out of that, when they found out that the soldiers, and the video comes back, and these soldiers are going up and down over hills, and all of a sudden they see some militia start firing on Americans, and the Americans haven't fired on them first, the American public is going to turn against the government. They're going to join our side so quick. We won't have room to put them all.
So again,
it's sad they are.
Again, back to the members, to everybody listening and everybody in the chat, okay, go back to your units and have this conversation that I'm having with Gary, okay? Talk about this stuff, all right? Contact some guys in the Arizona units and so forth. If you need some contact information, contact Mike and I, and we'll help you along. But, you know, there are situations brewing at the Arizona border. I mean, this could be what would happen? All right, let's just for take an example. What would happen if they did sign the UN treaty, which is basically a backdoor gun confiscation, which means that the United States would have to adhere itself to the United Nations armed treaty, which basically means that we would have to be disarmed. So what would happen, okay, if sometime after the elections there was a national edict where Obama gets on TV and says, we have decided to sign the UN treaty, and within 30 days, all registered firearms and unregistered firearms must be turned in to the nearest sheriff / police / ATF. What would happen, do you think?
Well, now we're getting down to where the rubber hits the road. If that scenario presented itself, the government would be fully prepared at that point. They would have their plan in place on how to deal with it. Don't assume that they're going to pass the law and just stand there. They're going to already have seized weapons from certain people. Under some guise. You know, we can... To me, that is inconceivable that they are dumb enough to think that they could put out notice without having started the operation already.
Okay, well, let me put another thing out there. Okay, what if they did it with gold? That's happened before, remember?
Well, that happened before, and my mother told me that her father, she was, let's see, about 13 years old then, and her father had said the country's going to the dogs.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love that Texas flag. Come and get it. I think they would be the hot-selling item.
Well.
But, again, that's a tough one because, you know, I really can't say. I don't know what would happen. But, you know, whether they tried that, if they tried that, the thing is they're going to say, as long as we leave the initiative to them and they set the time and the place, they will be fully prepared to enforce whatever they're doing. They've gone to all the gold selling places, even pawn shops, to find out where gold went. And just like firearms, they'll say, well, you had some. Where is it?
Well, they enacted, they snuck in the health care bill that all purchases of $600 or more require 1099, especially of precious metals, and they were emphasizing on precious metals because that's what they want to do. They want to find out who's trading in gold.
Right.
And most people that are trading in gold, like myself, are trading in coins. I don't trade bullion. I trade 1-ounce coins, right? Or a 1/2-ounce or 1/10-ounce coins and so forth. Because it's really going to be hard to sell 10 ounces of bullion to somebody when the economy collapses and so forth. But a 1 ounce coin or a tenth of an ounce coin has some merit value. Same thing with silver. Okay, but it's just the fact that they want. See, in order to control, they have control of the money via the Federal Reserve. Okay, and in order to control. Any kind of free market, they need to control something like the precious metals so that people have to depend on the government for their substance, and that would be your little debit card and so forth. And I gotta throw this in. This is a friend of mine who studies a lot of embryology and so forth, and he says that he heard a rumor that all of credit card, debit card transactions all start with the three numbers 666. Just throwing that out there. The electronic one, not the one that you see, but there's an electronic transaction number that none of us see, but anyway.
You've heard of gun shows, and the only people required to report gun sales are people licensed to sell guns. Now, I would assume the same is true. The only people required to, it's just like a bank. If you go down and cash a check for over $10,000, I think you have to, I've had to do it a couple times. You fill out all the paperwork if you want the cash. Well, if you get a check or cashier's check, it's different.
When I started prepping and getting ready for this, you know, I had considerable amount of cash in the bank from the sale of business and all that. And it took me almost a whole year to get it all out. Because I had to do it 3,000, 2,000, you know, small enough amounts where I didn't draw any attention to myself and so forth. And I quickly converted it into gold. I think the bank was right down one town from where I bought my gold. So I pulled $8,000 out of the bank. I went down there and bought $8,000 worth of gold. That was like 3 years ago and so forth because I wanted to do it while the dollar had enough value and the gold was low enough where it was affordable. Well, turns out that I think that's a fairly wise thing, and I got my entire investment is based on gold. But the thing is that if the government decides they want to take it away, okay, well first they're going to make it illegal to own it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So now, if you're caught with gold, so first they say, okay, turn in your gold and we'll give you this market value, which is going to be considerably less than what the fair market value or gold trading on the free market now. So,
right.
So all of a sudden, you know, so they're saying that, well, you're not getting your $1,353 an ounce. I'm going to give you $600 an ounce for your gold, okay? But you have to turn it in. So now it's a crime to own gold, something that you paid for, and now it's a crime, okay? So that's the last act of a desperate nation, a desperate government when they start doing it. And that's where we're at. The government is getting that desperate.
Well, what you're talking about, remember in 1932 or 33, whenever it was when they called gold in, you got $20 an ounce. And after all the gold was in, after the deadline came, they jacked the price up to $32 an ounce. That means the people that held the gold, their friends, the bankers, had got a 60% profit on the gold that they held, the ones that were allowed under license to hold gold. And you're right, the same thing's going to happen, that we'll get screwed in the long end. But back to what I'm saying about licensed people, they're going to be golden gun shows, because you don't have to, if you buy it from somebody walking around with a rifle on his shoulder, he doesn't have to report anything. There's no law that requires it, only the licensed dealers. Same thing's true with gold. So if I meet you down there and I trade some cash for gold at a gun show or in front of a convenience store, there's no law that can require that reporting. There's nothing that imposes upon you the requirement to report. Only those that are licensed gold dealers, which is the ones that advertise and tell you how you need to buy gold, and we'll hold it for you, we'll give you certificates. They'll send you the bullion,
that's
too.
That's what that whole reporting structure of $600, any transactions that are $600 or higher, you're supposed to report to on 1099 to IRS. And they were aiming at gold, precious metals. And ammunition. And
well, that gets us into a whole different realm. Are you a taxpayer or not? Or are you, for example, the gun law says you're supposed to record any sale of a gun. But if you do a private sale, there's no law that requires you to do it. If you do a private sale of gold, we have a right to barter in this country.
That's what they're taking.
They can't take that.
No, yes, they can. They want to take that. They want what they want to remove. Okay, listen, we are going away from a free market to crony capitalism, right? And now it's become corporatism. Okay, the Supreme Court is just now just recently said that corporations have the same rights as human beings. Okay, and 150 years ago, a corporation couldn't own property. So what they're doing is they're trying to remove the free market system and employ corporatism or crony capitalism, where the game is fixed, where a person like you and I are not allowed to be able to do any kind of transactions that the government isn't aware of. That's what they're trying to do.
Well, I understand they're trying to do that. My point, I think, is quite simple, that if I have some gold and you have something that I want in exchange for it, I don't care what the value is. I'll barter with you over it.
And what will happen, okay, as what happened when the British tried to embargo the United States before 1812, the black market was the booming market, right? Everything became
right.
Black market. People traded on the black market. They traded whiskey for stuff. They traded guns and ammunition and flints and powder, okay? They didn't want to use American script. They didn't want to use stamps. They didn't want to use anything that was registered and had a number and got printed on a press that they thought was worthless and so forth. And that's where we're at right now. And the whole thing is that the whole idea of the Federal Reserve is to maintain control of the money source and the money supply, and it's failing miserably, and more people are getting away from traditional type transactions and so forth. A lot of people are using cash, right? Not using their debit or credit cards. A lot of people are involved in the barter, myself included and so forth. And I have situated myself that when the economy does collapse, I will do quite well because all of my assets are tangible.
Yeah.
Right?
And well, I've done the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, so come Thursday, we're going to talk, with Barry's on, we're going to talk about like ETFs, like these people that, well, I'll take my 401k and trade it for a gold ETF. Well, you have the gold in your pocket, you don't own it.
You'll get the value of whatever the government determines the value to be at the time
if you can get it, right?
Well, they'll give you the Federal Reserve notes in exchange for it. I mean, that's the whole thing. If you have gold, certificates for gold that they're holding for you in ounces, you're going to be at the $20 an ounce, so to speak, whatever the government decides. If you hold the bullion, though, in your pocket, like you and I do, then you're going to get whatever you can barter for it.
Okay, Gary, we got to go back and take a break. We're at the top of the hour. Guys, hang loose. We'll be right back. We'll take a short break. Okay, we are back. I got to do some ads here. I want you guys to take a look at our giveaway that Freebird and I are putting together. It's free. All you got to do is sign up for it, guys. You know, if we get a little donations and so forth, then the prize goes up. Ultimately, he's got some pretty cool night vision glasses. I have a set, and they work pretty damn good. Where I live up here, when we lose power, since it's up in the mountains, there are no streetlights. It gets dark, real dark. And Gen 1 Starlight technology and so forth. But, you know, it gives you about 100, 150-yard vision at nighttime, which is a pretty good advantage as opposed to not having the ability to see in the dark. So take a look at it. Just go sign up for it, okay? All you got to do is just sign, register, and so forth, that we're going to be giving it away the end of, I think it's the 28th of October. We'll be giving it away. We didn't get a chance to do the trivia thing today, but we will do it Thursday. So stay tuned for Thursday. I also want to say that Wednesday, October 20th, I will be on the Intel Hub with Shepard and Alex at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. That's the intelhub.com. We actually are going to be cross-promoting with those guys, and they'll be on my show, and I'll be on their show. And hopefully some of their listeners will come here, and some of you guys will go there. So look forward to that. We'll announce it again, but it will be Wednesday, October 20th at 1 p.m. Okay, so Gary, we're talking about... I want to bring something up. Okay, I want to bring something up about the states. I had a long talk with Mike about this. You know, the United States of America, especially now, is a pretty diversified country when you take a look at all the states, the personalities, the cultures, you know, the South, the East, the West, and so forth. And you know, one of the things is that the only thing that the federal government really does for the states, other than collect taxes, is just kind of, you know, originally they were just there to help regulate commerce and so forth. But the 10th Amendment allows for the states to basically manage themselves. That's how I read it, okay? And what I see is that when we do get the currency collapse and anarchy does hit the state, the first thing that's going to happen is that you're going to see the nation states basically, like Ron Paul said, you know what, the federal government, that's your problem. You know, we have our own problems. You deal with your problem, we'll deal with our problems, and so forth. And it kind of reminds me of early Greece. The early Greeks were basically nation states. They had the Spartans, they had the Athenians, and then the Thessalonians, and so forth. And they all basically had their own king, and they were all their own little nation. And the only time when they became a unified Greece is when, like, the Persians decided that they wanted to add Greece to the Persian Empire and so forth, right? And I think that's one of the things that we've gotten away from is that, you know, they tried to the United States of America is trying to, instead of letting the states do their own thing and manage their own issues and so forth, the federal government has basically brought its corruptness into the state's government and so forth. And that's one of the things that we need to get away from is that. So we need a lot less federal government.
Definitely. And if you go back and read the minutes of the constitutional debates, you'll see what the intent was, which is far cry from this. The states are actually more diverse now than they were back then when there were only 13 colonies.
Yeah.
And the right of local government to the 9th and 10th Amendments both were incorporated for that very reason, that the general welfare, and welfare didn't mean the same then as it does now. I mean, they've changed the meaning of that word, just like gay used to be happy, and I still call them queers. The common defense was necessary, and the War of 1812 was proof of that. Had they been 13 or 17 colonies during the War of 1812, colonies would be taken over one at a time without that common element of defense in the Navy and the ability to move between the states to defend the states. It wouldn't have happened.
Right, but that's the commonality that happened due to the...
That's the reason for the Constitution, that common defense. Now, the commerce primarily was what one external treaty, so that you didn't have different states vying for a better deal with the treaty with a foreign nation, and two, was internally, and this did reply internally, it didn't mean that if I could buy it in Arizona, I can't buy it in California, like they're trying to make it now. But the idea was, if you were a coastal state, can you charge tariffs or fees for an inland state to go to your harbor and ship overseas? Well, that would destroy the ability of the inland colony to be able to make a profit on their product, because the profit would be ripped off by the transit state that they had to go through.
That's what the federal government was supposed to be managing.
That was about the extent of it.
That was about the extent of it. Right.
Okay. Right. Internal and external both.
Yeah. And to make sure that something that was sold in California wouldn't be outlawed to be sold in Pennsylvania, because it was manufactured in Pennsylvania as well, okay? And,
right.
And that was the whole thing of the federal government. And also, as the federal government developed any bureaucracy to resolve a problem, once that problem was resolved, that bureaucracy was supposed to dissolve itself. It was supposed to go away. But it didn't. What happened is that they realized that it was a profit center. And when I say profit center, the government isn't making a profit, but someone's making a profit in those bureaucracies. Someone through the FDA, the FCC, the DOT, someone's making a profit. And that's where we got to get rid of this corporatocracy, where we have the corporations getting involved with the government and subsidizing these government bureaucracies, so that we have this crony capitalism going in. And that's the thing that's killing us right now, okay? And it's so far rampant, so corrupt, there's no ending it other than some implosion, which like I guarantee you was going to happen. So with that, I want to talk a little bit about November. We have these elections in November. I guarantee you the Dems are going to lose the House and possibly the Senate, okay? And if they don't lose it, they're basically going to lose their power grip they have, because there'll be enough veto votes with wearing red ties and so forth. And what basically that will do is stalemate anything. Nothing will get done, good or bad. Now, I don't see that as a bad thing, because just about anything that they do now basically turns to shit anyway. So if they could just be constrained to do nothing, that's fine by me. What I am worried about is the lunatic that's sitting in the White House, is that, you know, this guy's a narcissistic clown who has absolutely, the only skills he really has the only good thing I can say about him is that he smokes and he's a one-term president, right? And so, you know, what is this guy liable to do when he sees his power base leaving? Now, look who's left his cabinet, okay? You got Axelrod, you got Summer, you got Emanuel, you got Jones, okay? All these guys have left his cabinet less than 2 years, okay? Less than 2 years. Why do you think these guys are leaving the ship? Is it sick?
Well, I think some have suggested if you're not a yes man, you don't belong there.
Well, but Summers, you know, and Axelrod, they were responsible for fixing the economy and so forth, and see what a good job they did, right? The excuse for Summers, he didn't want to lose his tenure in Harvard, okay? These guys are going away because they know that this ship is going down, and they don't want to be anywhere near it when it goes down, because, you know, I'm pretty sure even Emanuel, the reason he's leaving is because he's probably certain that Obama's going to do something drastic to make sure that he doesn't lose his power base. That's what I'm betting.
Well, I think that's probably true. It's hard to tell, because, as I said earlier, the government isn't stupid. But they can make some drastic mistakes in the assumption that they're right, too. And I think that's where we've been going for the last 2 years, that they've made some assumptions that they can achieve these goals. The best example is the economy. Ever since 1913, we've been on a track towards fiat currency, and fiat currency is kind of interesting. I use the analogy that suppose there are no Federal Reserve notes, and I go down to the bank and I want some Federal Reserve notes. So I say I want to borrow $100,000 in Federal Reserve notes. And the bank says, yes, do you have any collateral? Yes, I have a house. How much is it worth? $200,000. Okay, we can loan you $100,000. Sign here, and they give me a stack of money, $100,000, and I walk out of the bank with that and the note in my hand. And on the way out of the bank, I look at the note, and it says, you will pay back in 1 year $110,000.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Where's that $10,000 come from? Because there's only $100,000 in existence. Well, the $10,000 will come into existence the same way as the $100,000. It will be borrowed into existence. Well, that's a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
And it works as long as it can be propped up. But the ability to prop it up, even drawing these massive amounts of taxes, is not sufficient to return the debt. If you took all the M1 money now, you couldn't pay but about 7% of the private debt in this country, let alone the public debt. That means that 93% of the people, their collateral belongs to the bank. So it's a transfer of ownership. That's exactly what it is. Now, if you're free and clear on what you own, they'll try and find a way to get it from you. But anybody that owes anything on their house, their car, or anything where it's collateralized, the bank owns it. And they own 93% of the property in this country. Well, the Ponzi scheme they keep trying to prop it up, and if you look at it as the cliff, every time they prop it up, that cliff gets a little higher.
Well, what's happening now, I don't know if everybody knows it. What's happening now is the Federal Reserve is buying Treasury notes at about $30 billion a month, okay? They're buying 10-year notes. And the Treasury takes that $30 billion and loans it to banks like Bank of America, Chase, J.P. Morgan, yada, yada, yada. And they invest it in the stock market on their own shares. So what they do is they put these buy orders in for Bank of America shares. They get the market up, and then they'll put order to sell, like they're going to do pretty soon. And then they'll sell all their own shares that they bought with money that they borrowed from the Treasury at 0%. Right, and Bernanke bought a Treasury bill with, he's supposedly going to get 2.4% in 10 years, but that ain't never going to happen because every month they roll the debt over, and it loses a little bit. And everybody seems to think that when it gets to 2%, then that's when the crash will start. So that's the Ponzi scheme that's making the market come out. Now, what's happening with that, it makes a lot of people feel like it's good, like things are improving. Well, the market's going up. Yeah, unemployment's still at 17%, but the market's going up. So things got to be getting better. But they don't realize that this market is being rigged by a Cray supercomputer somewhere in the bottom of Goldman Sachs. And that's the whole thing about these Ponzi schemes. Now, when the Treasury bills start getting sold, the first entities to sell Treasury bills will be big banks like Bank of America and J.P. Morgan and Chase and so forth. Okay. And the other thing that's interesting to note, that the Japanese, as of Monday, have taken over from the Chinese as the largest owner of American debt. The Chinese have slowly been filtering and getting rid of all their notes and trading it in for gold and for neodymium and other precious metals and resources that they need, so forth. So now all of a sudden the Japanese are holding all of American notes. Well, the current Japanese prime minister is not a real fan of the United States. He would like for them to get out of Okinawa, and he basically doesn't want to have anything to do with the United States. But the Japanese economy depends on the United States economy to a certain point. But as the Japanese yen continues to gain in value over the American dollar, at one point or another, Japanese goods will be too expensive, and that'll be it. Okay, and then Japanese will start dumping all their treasury notes, and then you'll see a fire sale ensue and so forth. And that's what you need to be aware of, and that's what we're at right now. We're at the cusp where that could happen tomorrow, or it could happen in April, but it's going to happen. It's going to happen real soon. And when that happens, that's when anarchy hits the streets.
Right. And that's where we are, end up being unprepared. And that was the whole reason that I developed this plan for us to take the initiative.
Yeah, well, so if I told you that we have 6 months before we're going to have anarchy in the streets and so forth, what would you say and what would you do?
Well, I think that if we take the initiative, we can avoid the anarchy in the streets. When you and I talked about this the other day, one of your concerns was the flow of food and services. The plan accounts for that.
Yeah.
If we go through the plan, we'll get to the point where that's dealt with, the economy's dealt with. In fact, the plan goes from first acts of illegal activity to walking into the White House.
Yeah. Yeah.
In 10 steps. But, you know, it has to come in an order. There's a reason for that order, and it, again, it emulates what occurred during the Revolutionary period.
Okay.
That small areas were taken over, and they expanded, and they expanded, and the British would come through and transfer ownership back to the British, but then the colonists would push them out. Basically, we kept them in New York and Charleston for most of the war after they left Boston.
Right.
And they would venture out, but it was just a like a comet, you know. It had a tail and a head, and as the head and tail went through, they held it. They held Philadelphia for a little over a year, but once they left, it was gone. Now, we're looking at the same thing of going back, and one way I described it is if we look at the United States as having a black cancer covering the whole thing, but there are these little white cells that keep growing and growing and start taking back, bringing into the constitutional forces or the restorers, bring them into our control. And that control isn't necessarily acquired by blood in battle. It can be acquired by other means, and that's the whole idea here. And one of those means is putting the fear in the government of God and the people. Those are key elements. Until they fear us. At this point, we tend to, on an average, fear them. You don't, I don't. I think a lot of the people that are active, the people on the list, don't fear the government. They're apprehensive about what might happen. But most people fear the government. If you don't believe me, say IRS in front of them. Watch them slow down when a cop pulls in behind them on the street.
Yeah, oh, no.
They're afraid.
Yeah, I understand. But if you read the novel that James Rawls wrote, the survival novel?
No.
Okay, it's a fairly accurate depiction of what a currency collapse would generate in the United States of America. Basically, within 2 months or a month, you know, the supply chain would totally collapse, and there would be total anarchy, and the government would basically lose control, and there's not enough soldiers here to regain control. They'd have to bring in foreign troops, which almost every empire that's failed has always managed to do. And it's all predicated on a currency collapse, but like I said, we are that close to that scenario. Okay, but one of the things that happens is that the militia units, separate units and so forth, are the ones that have the tribes, that have their groups, have the best chance of surviving. And individuals in the city, you're done. You know, I mean, if you can't get out, you're done, and so forth. So the big thing is that how do you maintain the continuity of government after that happens?
Well, that's where committees of safety come in.
Right.
They maintained it then, but see, the scenario you're looking at, if they bring in foreign troops, they will be helping us rather than hurting us.
Uh-huh.
Because the sympathy of the, we're one of the best armed, privately armed countries in the world. And there are people right now that gladly pay their taxes. They gladly appreciate the cops shooting the bad guys and occasionally a good guy. They gladly approve of all this. But when foreign troops come in and they have to rely on foreigners, what's going to happen to those people that have felt an obedience to government? Are they going to have second thoughts about that obedience? The hearts and minds is a concept that evolved from our American Revolution far more than it did from the books that were written about well prior to Vietnam, going back to the Philippines, where you try and gain the hearts and minds and put fear in. We belong here. And those of us that haven't joined us yet will join us if they see that our purpose is to restore constitutional government, to make sure food and water and sewage and communications and electricity and all these things continue.
Yeah,
that's hearts and minds, and that's people looking for the continuity to come back and be maintained in this country. And if we provide that as the constitutional forces or the restorers of the Constitution, and the usurpers are the guys that are bringing in foreign troops and making rest like Germany did in France during World War II, and just taking people away and locking them up, more and more people will join our side. Whether we get more than 30% as occurred in the revolution or not is beyond me. But remember, the revolution started with probably less than 0.3% of the 3 million population.
Yeah. I see people in the chat are talking about who won't join and all that stuff. Well, let me tell you what's going to happen, okay? First off, if you're not prepped, if you don't have your beans and rice and bullets now, you know, and your ability for clean water and so forth, then you probably won't survive and you'll be depending on whatever government assistance that there is, okay? And that's not going to be very pretty because it's going to be very sporadic and hapless at best and so forth, okay? The survivors, now, remember, they're counting on 90% population reduction, okay? The old are going to go pretty quickly, right? The infirm are going to go pretty quickly, right? And then what will happen is that the internal strife will basically bring that population down a generous amount, 40-50% and so forth. And after a year and a half, all you're going to have left is probably less than 20% of the population of the United States of America intact. Okay, let me tell you what happens when that happens.
Well, I understand that the 20% is going to be the strongest and hardiest, isn't it?
It is going to be the strongest and hardiest because that's the rule of the jungle and that's how it works. That's the rule of the herd, okay? But let me tell you what happens when there's only 20 to 30% of us left. Two words, China and Russia, will be coming to take what's left.
Okay, the plan contemplates that and how to deal with that.
And I just want everybody to be aware of that. You know, don't think it can't happen because it will.
Well, let me run a different scenario very, very quickly. In step four of the plan, the militia and under the direction of the Committee of Safety will begin securing transportation, communication, public utilities, food production facilities. We do make enough produce enough food in this country to supply the needs of this country, not as well as we used to and not as well as we'd like to now. But that resource could be developed pretty rapidly, and one of the best examples is, for example, corn. A lot of corn is going to waste right now, because it's going into ethanol, it's going into...
45% of our corn.
A lot of it.
45% of our corn is going into fuel.
If the militias in the Midwest then secured the food production facilities and went to the farms and made sure that the corn went where it was supposed to go, not where the government wanted it to go, then they have provided the means for that food to continue to be produced enough to sustain us.
Well, here's what happens with that, though. Okay, this is where you got to get government out of the free enterprise system. What they did to the farmers is that they made it where they subsidized corn, where a farmer says, "Well, I get more for corn because it's going to fuel consumption and costs me the same amount of water and the same amount of fertilizer as to grow soy, wheat, barley, rice, or whatever." But they say, we'll subsidize the cost of corn because we want it for ethanol production and so forth, for whatever reasons that they thought that was going to help us minimize our dependence on foreign oil, not thinking that how much corn is used for livestock feed and so forth, which is where a good 80% of the corn does go, okay? So if you take your 40% of your crop and you make it into ethanol, then that 80% of what's left goes to production for animals and so forth. There's not much left for human consumption, not that we consume all that much. But the thing is that left to the free market, that would never happen, okay? The corn would sit there and find a happy place in the market at a happy price, and farmers that wanted to grow corn that could do it and make a profit would, and those that wanted to grow soy would, and so forth. But the government gets involved in it and changes the direction and makes them do certain things, and basically skews the market. And that's the thing that's really screwed up, is when the government gets involved, it skews the market, and the market can never recover until the government go totally away and everything comes collapsing and falls back to a natural level.
Well, when it falls back to a natural level, you know, the areas that become white, where they're secured by the constitutional forces, people are allowed. They won't get any subsidies. But they will be allowed to grow the product of their choice, or they might be encouraged to grow something more productive, more beneficial to feeding the nation. But once those areas are secured in the production facilities, the canning plants, and everything comes within the control of the constitutional forces, that production is back up. Now, the committees of safety and the militia are going to be the ones that secure the food production facilities. If they find people that are not cooperative, they might take over the facilities, the transportation facilities, wherever there's a major a shipping point for railroads. Those would have to be taken over, and you know, people would sign a loyalty oath, and they would be have militia there to make sure that they keep the trains running, that they don't do sabotage on the shipments of food, so that the food chain continues to function in the way that it can in this country and the way that it basically does now. But if anything, innovation and improvement might come in very early as these areas are secured. Now, if the government were to try and stop a train in areas that failed during the course, that only helps us again, because we go out then and make sure whatever we have to do, we put flatbeds with machine guns, whatever is, and
well, that's a good
by
point.
Then we'll have things and everything.
Because all of the executive orders in the Patriot Act, they can take over all transportation, right? It can take over all fuel and so forth. And then what happens is that you got yourself embroiled in this guerrilla war, because there are people that aren't going to stand for it, myself included. You know, that's one of the things where when that happens, if martial law is declared and they do that, and I just consider it an act of war, and then I enact my little plan, you know, which I've been prepping and planning for years and years and years, and there's going to be a lot of people like me out there that are going to enact their little plans and so forth. And what will happen is that we'll be embroiled in this huge guerrilla-style civil war with what's left of the federal government as they try to maintain their cog and so forth. And it'll take a while for you know, the rest of the American, who's ever left, basically to beat down the federal government. They will eventually, but it will take a while.
So where would the federal government be? Will they be everywhere? Do you think that that's conceivable?
No, they won't be everywhere. They will be...
Okay, now let's look at executive orders. Executive orders are orders from the executive of the United States to his agencies. They don't operate on you or me. They operate on his agencies, the Food and Drug Administration, Department of Defense, if they abide, and all these people. There's nothing in... I read them, and there's nothing in them that says that I can't resist them.
No,
I have every intention of resisting them, and we as the Patriot community have to resist them and say, screw you. And we have to get people that have day-to-day jobs, like running trains or running the food processing plants and things like this. We need to get them to come over to us one way or another, either willingly or by replacing them with people that are drafted out of the community and want a job and want to make sure that they can feed their family to go in these plants and make sure that everything produces.
Yeah.
So the difficulty might come in transportation, but I have a feeling that that's going to be bad PR for the government, because we're trying to keep the food flowing. Anybody going to support? Even the guys that have initially taken the side of the government might somewhere along the line say, well, the government can't feed me, but these guys can feed me. I think I'm going to switch sides.
Well, that's exactly what will happen. You're right. That's exactly what will happen. Those that have the resources, by however way you get it, will be the ones that are in power, okay? They'll be the ones that, if you got food and you're offering food to people, then you're going to have to get people to want to do whatever it is that you want to do and so forth, okay? And that's basically what I'm saying, that it's going to be it's going to be a tribal feudal system. Eventually it'll pull together where more and more people will realize that there's strength in numbers and so forth. But the most important thing, and this is, I can't stress this enough, the most important thing is that they have to allow the free market to go unimpaired, okay? And they cannot generate money out of paper. It needs to be something tangible that as basis for the currency. And I can't think of anything other than gold, silver, copper, and precious metals.
Well, I think it's... Step seven or eight is where we start looking at that. But in the meantime, the Federal Reserve notes are going to have to be the form. Everybody wants to end the Fed right now. If they do that, you can't buy groceries. So the Federal Reserve note has to be the currency of exchange. That'll be dealt with, and I sent you the economic solution. That will be dealt with when the time comes that we've taken enough of the country back where it can be dealt with. But in the meantime, there has to be some way of, you know, it could be that we end up issuing scrip like they did during the revolution, but more than likely, continuing to use the monopoly money is going to serve its purpose, because some point in time it will be exchanged for something of value, the internal currency that I mentioned in that one article, so that things work out the way they should, that people get their fair value for it. But you say tribal and feudal. No, it won't, because the whole idea of the committees of safety is to provide a continuity of government. It didn't turn tribal and feudal during the revolution. It doesn't have to now. Most other countries it does, because you don't have committees of safety communicating with each other. You know, Los Angeles saying, look, we got to feed people. We need some food. And the committee in the Nebraska saying, okay, we've got to send more food to Los Angeles. There's not a tribal in that, as long as we can keep the resources flowing.
Right.
And that becomes imperative.
Hold that thought. I got to take a quick break. We'll be back in about 5 minutes.
Love. All you need is love.
Okay, we're back. So we got about 15 minutes. So anyway, so we were talking about the dollar losing its reserve status as the reserve currency and what would happen. And Gary's contention is that we at one time had the ability to feed ourselves, which we grossly mismanaged and outsourced. So Gary, you're thinking that, you know, even though we do lose the reserve status, you know, it would take 2 to 8 years to rebuild that infrastructure. And I'm saying that within that 2 to 8 years, you're going to see hyperinflation because all of a sudden our supply chain is disrupted because our supply chain comes from outside the United States. Even though we have the infrastructure and we can put it back together, we're going to see hyperinflation while that infrastructure is being built. And that was my whole point about why we're going to experience a currency collapse. But when you see hyperinflation and food's not available, that's when you get anarchy. You know, there's an old Spanish saying that between anarchy and civilization is seven meals.
There probably is, you know, I believe there's enough food in this country to, the wheat and grain storage warehouses are phenomenal. I mean, these things are massive. I'm not sure where they're located, but I remember in the past, years ago, looking into it, it was surplus food. It was the over purchase to keep productivity up when they paid a farmer to create corn and all that. And from my understanding, everything that I've been able to find, those warehouses still exist. So we have millions of tons of grain available to us.
Okay, well, that's not entirely correct, okay? Last year, we gave the Chinese 500 million metric tons of hard winter wheat in lieu of an interest payment that we could not make.
And that was probably produced last year.
It was the surplus stores that have been just in storage for years. Okay, it was the surplus stores. It wasn't 1 year's production. We don't produce that much wheat. Okay, that was our surplus stores, 500 million metric tons of kernel, not processed wheat, but kernel went to the Chinese under the cover of darkness. I reported on this the beginning of 2010 because all of a sudden trains full of wheat were going from the Midwest to Seattle, and there was no reason for them going to a port in Seattle other than when they were being offloaded in ships and they were being sent to China, okay? And that was one of the things, one of the backdoor deals that Obama did to because we owed China a big interest payment of $600 billion or something, outrageous number, and we didn't have it. We didn't want, you know.
Okay, so let's look at where we are then, because if there's an economic collapse that you predict, we're going to run into the same situation, but there's going to be no recourse on our part. We're going to be completely subject to the government making things available. What I'm offering now is something that allows us to use the resources we have, work effectively in trying to reestablish those resources, and keep people going with the potential of increasing the availability beginning with each growing season.
I don't think we're going to be... Okay, some people will be at the dispensary.
When you went down to 20%, I think that you were talking about shortages of food and everything else. At least this way, there can be optimism and an effort to increase the production, the availability of food, as opposed to allowing the government to diminish that availability.
Well, what will happen?
My choice would be to go with the more optimistic approach, where we have within our power to try and make things work.
Well, and that's what will happen, okay? You know, the government will try to maintain control and control the production, but why do you think they're doing what they're doing to make, small farms illegal with Senate Bill 510 and so forth, where, you know, you're not allowed to keep heritage seals. You got to buy your seeds from a GMO producer and so forth, okay? So they can maintain control. But what will happen is that people, the self-sufficient people, okay, and I put myself in that class, the self-sufficient people who will grow and raise enough food to feed themselves and eventually expand on that, and communities that have farmland or were farmers and so forth will realize that they need to, increase their production, their farm production and so forth, just like they used to do 100 years ago. And that's what will happen. So we'll see an expansion on our food productions and so forth, but it won't be via the government. It'll be via the free market. It'll be via people doing it because they want to do it, and they want to run their business as they see fit, okay? And what's going to happen with the government is that the government, because of their inefficiency, they won't be able to maintain control over the food cycle chain, because like they won't be able to maintain control over the fuel chain and so forth, because all that's going to come to a grinding halt for a while. Just imagine what would happen if they had a bank holiday, okay? Because when the economy collapses, what's the first thing that they're going to do? They're going to shut down all the banks, right? How long will it take for the banks to shut down for the economy to stop working? 3 days.
Well, if the ball is in their court, yes.
Okay, so the whole cycle of this conversation, which we're coming full circle, is that I'm saying that between 2 to 6 months, there's going to be some economic event or some event that's going to cause a currency collapse of the United States dollar. That's going to affect the supply chain, since we're on a supply chain economics, okay? Before we got into supply chain economics, we lived in a macroeconomic world, which is we grew a lot of local food, and we depended on local sources for sustenance and so forth. And then we got into this long chain supply economics, which was part of the Reaganomics plan and so forth, where everything was decentralized, and there were these large assembly, machining, manufacturing centers, and it distributed goods and services, you know, through the country. And then after a while, we outsourced everything to China, and it we depend on China and other nations for our goods and services and so forth. That chain, okay, the weakest link in that chain, when it snaps, then the supply chain stops moving. When the supply chain stops moving, it's 3 days, and everything's chaos. And I'm saying, if they have a bank holiday because of a currency collapse, because of something international happened and so forth, that's what we're going to expect. Well, we will get it back, but it's going to take a lot of work. And so if you want to establish the infrastructure to bring all that back to reality, then now is the time to do it. People need to get on to this right now. And
how can you do it in contradiction to the government's imposed influence over the industry? You can't. The government will say, no, you can't do that. That's what they're saying now, right?
Yeah.
Now, let's just suppose the militia takes over Monsanto and says, your patents are revoked. You will provide all the seed that's necessary. You will provide it at a reasonable cost based on the cost of production. Your profits are gone for a while.
That ain't gonna happen.
You were doing that under the authority of the people. The means and the whole idea of this expansive system is when we take an area, when we secure an area, it becomes free market again.
Okay.
As far as the government causing a collapse, the reason it grows slowly, and, you know, obviously the government's going to have a copy of the plan too, but the reason it grows slowly is to start encouraging people to decide what side they're going to take early on and start shifting people to our side, putting the fear of God in the people and the government. And when you see everybody leave Washington for Brazil because it's safer there, who's going to be running the show for them here?
Well, that's a good point. Who is?
Well, that's the whole point. Now, we get the liaison committee will be endeavoring constantly from the beginning of building relations with government agencies, state, local, county, and federal, letting them know that we're regaining the Constitution, we're on our way, we want to keep in touch with you because somewhere along the line you're going to have to make a decision. Now, here's our phone number. You give us a call if you want to come into compliance with what the people's will is now, not those idiots that are running the show in Washington.
Uh-huh.
We're always open for these people to join us. And that's the whole idea, is to provide the right side and make it apparent to everybody that the right side is this side. Come on over.
Okay.
Now, there's going to be, for example, Monsanto, there's going to be a force. You are not going to make the profit you've been making. There will be no GMO. You will sell seeds at cost plus a reasonable profit. You will sell Roundup at cost plus a reasonable profit. Everything that you sell will be cost plus a reasonable profit, and that reasonable profit probably effectively would be 10%. Are the shareholders going to be happy? No. Fuck the shareholders.
Well, but
right now we've got something more important than the profitability of your shares.
What happens if Monsanto doesn't survive?
Monsanto facilities in this country, if they're taken over by our side, if they come into the white areas.
But you're talking a socialist takeover, right?
I think the infrastructure has to be. It did in, the Germans did it in France in World War II, and we did it in return on the way back in. Yes, there has to be some of that. There are certain necessities that have to be controlled to make sure that they continue productive until we get back to constitutional
government. Let's ask our audience. Okay, chat room, what do you think? Should we take over Monsanto, kick them all out, take over production, get rid of the GMO seeds?
No, you don't kick them all out. No, I didn't say that.
But that's what Chavez is doing right now.
Well, if you read the plan, if you slowed down a little bit, you'd see what the purpose is. Is you go into these facilities and say, look, the constitutional forces have taken over. We're going back to the Constitution and a free market economy. We'd like you to continue operating as you are. However, there are certain restrictions that we're going to impose, and that is reasonable profit, no licensing year to year of your seed. That can all be worked out when the tumultuous period that we're going through is over with. But right now, we need to keep the food supply existing in this country. Your cooperation would be appreciated. Uh-huh. Now, some people that work for Monsanto are going to say, yeah, I'm on your side. Uh-huh. And some are going to say no. Uh-huh. And some will be marginal. But everybody signs a loyalty oath, and if they violate that oath, the phrase that I used on there is one that came out of the revolutionary period, that I understand if I violate this oath, I will be presumed to be a traitor. Okay. Well, what do they do with traitors? They shoot the fuckers, right? Well, that would be what the oath said during the revolution.
No, I understand, but Monsanto is dependent on the supply chain to be in existence, and I don't think that Monsanto is going to have an option to do anything because it'll be too bankrupt. It's too big to operate without the supply chain as it is now.
And I'm too big to fail?
No, it's not too big to fail. What I'm saying is that it's too big to be successful. Okay, there's a difference. Now, what will be successful is the small independent farms that can quickly change direction depending on what happens. See, the reason Monsanto is so successful with their GMO and so forth is because they're forcing nature.
They're getting government to make it easy for them to control the entire food chain that
right.
they're involved
and my point is that because, you know, they have their GMO seeds, which are have the built-in pesticides and so forth, but you can't. You can't germinate them, you can't get heritage seeds from them because of the pesticide. It kills off the gene and allows the next generation seeds to produce, okay? So no one's going to want that because all of a sudden now you have to continue to buy, or you have to buy the correct fertilizer for them to grow because there's a catalytic action happening. So companies that have done things like that, which is against the course of nature, are going to fail, whereas people that have the heirloom seeds, like I save my seeds and so forth, and so every year we grow from plants that we harvest and so forth. That's where farming's going to go back to, and that's where farming has to. We can't allow the Monsantos, we have to let them fail. They're going to be so large and so cumbersome, and
they have to have the opportunity to go back to heirloom production.
Okay, but my point is that they probably...
But in the interim, during this period of time, 2 to 8 years... they're going to have to cooperate with us to make sure that the food supply is met.
Yeah.
They have seeds in stock that will last for a couple years. The license that only allows you to plant it in this season.
What happens to them when they knock on your door at the third quarter and they're going, you know what, we don't have any money to keep the power open anymore because we can't make enough money with our current business model.
Then at that point we go to continental currency. We have no choice. But then go back to the economic plan. If the FRNs aren't there, then greenbacks are issued by the constitutional forces. They're accounted for, and they'll be distributed to provide a medium of exchange through the system.
Well, so what does Monsanto do when they can't afford to keep the doors open?
Well, they'll get paid for their product plus 10% profit.
That's
not good for the shareholders, but it keeps their doors open, doesn't it? And then they'd be told that you will go back to heirloom type seeds.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
And so they're allowed. Everybody keeps their job. I mean, the whole idea is you got to look at a transition of virtually everything, not just government, but everything. And who's going to take charge? The committees of safety, or eventually the when the state becomes secure, which is, I think, step five or six, at that point, the state, everybody within the state is pretty much brought into compliance, and there's just a few out pockets remaining that they be forced into compliance. Now, I didn't deal in the plan with cities like L.A., San Francisco, Sacramento, Houston, Dallas, Chicago, New York. I'm still working on how to do that, but I'm going to give you an example. Los Angeles, that the constitutional forces surround Los Angeles, and nobody leaves unless they sign a loyalty oath. They stay there. You keep supplying food to them, but people have to sign a loyalty oath. But if you don't have, if you're not a United States citizen, you get on I-5 South. You cannot get off. We'll provide food along the way, but you just keep going until you get down to Mexico, cross that border, and stay there. Get rid of a couple million people out of Los Angeles real quick. Yep. But then people have to, since it's going to be hard to take a large city, you surround it. And you don't let anybody out. I mean, you know, each step, every aspect of this has been, well, not everyone. I mean, you know, I'm not done with the plan. But I've thought of all these things, and I think they can be transitioned smoothly with the minimum impact, less impact than would occur than if the government sets the time and the place.
Okay. All right, Gary, we are out of time. We'll be talking about this again, I'm sure. And hopefully the currency won't collapse before you get your project done and everybody sign up on it. So that's Gary Hunt, everybody. Thank you, Gary, for coming on. And I look forward to you coming back. Hopefully you'll listen to our Thursday show. Okay, again,
I'm going to listen Thursday.
All right. I'll be on the Intel Hub Wednesday the 20th, 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I want to talk about the Patriot Store giveaway that Mike's going. Go and sign up for that. You know, it doesn't cost you a cent. Just go check it out, okay? There's 20-odd people in here. We should have 20 people signing up for it. The worst that can happen is you get something for free. I want to say hello to Liberty Dog. Thanks for popping in. And give me a call sometime. I'm going to talk to you about some stuff. And all of the other regulars and so forth, thanks for hanging out with us. Okay, we're going to have the stream till 8 o'clock. The Chat and Tunes is going to be happening, so from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. When we're not having a show, there'll be music. And Mike is in the process of basically, we're going to incorporate the chat room. So if you're on the DEF CON chat room, you'll actually be kind of seamlessly in this chat room, so you'll be able to listen to music while you're chatting there. With that, I'm out of time, and good night, and I look forward to you. Remember, we're going to be on 5 p.m. Thursday, and next week we're going to move this show to 5 p.m. because I think what happens is that most people tend to come on at 5 and so forth. And I know for guys like Matt and Sir Iron Dude, that kind of makes it difficult. And I'm sorry, dude, what can I do to make it up to you? But I have to do it for the greater good. So with that, have lots of music, and thanks, everybody, for hanging in. Gary has been as great as always, and I'll talk to you later.
He hit me, and it felt like a kiss. He hit me, but it didn't. Hit me.
to the point of that.
Goes around, comes around. Goes around, comes around.
To the go to the come to the.
Goes around, comes around.
That goes around and comes around.
Goes around, comes around.
That which is, that which says.
Goes around, comes around.
Let love go while you let it stay.
Goes around, comes around.
Goes
around, comes around.
That goes around and comes around.
The up to the end to the G to the
Them are the exhausted, this is Bob Marley face. And that's how you know we move with the heaven, the grace. Them are finna influence up the place. Yes, we not gone from in the funny case. Them but a rain with a fart, but one man knows that. Them are also seed and one free crop. You know what them things have been stopped. Here when the gang taking it from the top. Why not me way sensing? Black wallaby sensing. Mr. DJ, don't stop DJ. Mr. DJ won't stop DJ. Mr. DJ don't stop DJ. Mr. Muffin, Mr. Love, only DJ. Mr. DJ don't stop DJ. Mr. DJ don't stop DJ. Mr. DJ, is that within the bottle? Mr. DJ.
Goes around, comes around. That goes around.
coming and gone.
Goes around and comes around.
We are rocked to the break of dawn.
Goes around and comes around.
Going and coming and gone. Going and coming and gone.
Goes around and comes around.
We are rocked till the break of dawn.
Goes around and comes around.
Going and coming and gone.
Goes around and comes
of day, and that's a ghost.